Welcome to the stage, Jackie Ray.
Watch this. This.
Give him the mouth. You should have just complied.
Did we? Jissy. Whatever.
You're listening to At the Half. And now, Jackie Ray.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of At the Half. I'm Jackie Ray. We're going to do today's show a little bit differently. I know I always talk sports at the half, which is the second segment, but we're going to do it a little bit differently today because I have a very special guest. So I'm going to hit this sports really quick and I'm going to let you hear the story from Jeremy Gumbo Christian. Now, if you follow me on Instagram, which you should, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, all of that is at Jackie Ray TV. But specifically on my Instagram, I have posted his shows a lot because he really does have an amazing story. He had a stroke in 2020, and a year to the day later, this man was back on stage once again doing stand-up comedy. It's an amazing story. I think it will inspire a lot of you. So I'm going to let him have at it the entire second half of the show. So make sure you check that out. Also, make sure you go to my YouTube page. Once again, that's Jackie Ray TV, to see some clips from that that didn't necessarily make it into the audio portion. We were talking for like an hour and a half, guys. So he has an amazing story that I think a lot of you will be able to appreciate. So I'm not going to hold you too long in this first segment because I really want you to have time to sit with Jeremy Gumbo Christian. But I did want to really briefly talk about the head coaching situation in the NFL. If you were here last week, then you know that Chris Clark and I, aka CK2K, we talked about the fact that there was only one black head coach in the league right now, and that is Mike Tomlin. This is something that is easily rectified, in my opinion. This is something that honestly shouldn't be a thing. If the white owners, white GMs, things of that nature. It really does start with the owners, though, and trickles down. But if they really gave a damn about this situation, about equality, we wouldn't be talking about this. But they don't. So they have zero intentions of rectifying this situation. And anything that they do is for show, to be politically correct. But I don't think you're going to change the hearts and the minds of the ownership of the NFL. Nonetheless, I do think that, like I said, some efforts are going to be put forth to make it look like they're trying to rectify the situation. So I want to break down the 8 head coaching positions that are currently open. Obviously, the Dolphins, the Raiders, Houston Texans, Chicago Bears, New York Giants, the Vikings, the Jaguars, and then the Denver Broncos. Now, the first person the Bears interviewed, because again, if you were at the on the show last week, you know that Chris and I said Brian Flores all day for Chicago. It just makes sense. But the first person the Bears interviewed is Doug Peterson. And if you're not an Eagles fan, you probably completely forgot about him. You probably forgot that he led the Eagles to the Super Bowl and won it with Nick Foles. But you might remember that he pulled Jalen Hurts in favor of Nate Sudfeld. He was fired after that, as he should have been, and he didn't work at all last season. So I did find it a little peculiar that he was the first person that they interviewed, but whatever. Now, considering the absolutely horrible nature in which Matt Nagy handled Justin Fields, I really believe in my heart of hearts, and I know this is debatable, but I think Matt Nagy took about 2 years off of that young man's career. He just handled him horribly. Because of that, that's why I think the first person you should interview is Brian Flores, because you really want to resume some sort of faith in this kid, make him feel that you got his back and you want the best for his career. So I thought that should have been the first, but they did ultimately interview him at some point. They also interviewed Brian Leftwich, who is also one of my personal favorites. So let me just say this before any of you guys get the wrong idea. I'm rooting for everybody black, period. It's literally my Facebook slogan. So I'm rooting for everybody black always. So that's what we're going to talk about right now, in case you were a little confused what we were going to talk about. Let me let you know that. So again, Brian Leftwich is another one of my favorites. There isn't literally, there's not one black coaching potential that I'm not rooting for personally. And on top of that, I really think that and I know some of you guys will debate this, but I feel like those of you who debate this are not Black, but it's something different when you are competing or even on a job when you're dealing with someone who's Black and understands the struggle that you're in within that position. Because for the longest time, Black quarterbacks weren't even a thing because white folks didn't think we were smart enough to hold that position, which shouldn't come to a surprise to anybody considering the NFL didn't even want to play Black people suffering from CTE because they felt like we came out the womb slower than white people. So that shouldn't be a surprising thing to anybody. And that's actually a historical fact. I'm not making that up. So for me, I think every Black quarterback in this league deserves a Black head coach, or at bare minimum, a Black offensive coordinator. Now, keep in mind, I'm saying this praying that my Saints keep Jameis Winston, unless, of course, we can get Russell Wilson. But I'm still saying that a Black quarterback deserves, and his career would be better served having a Black head coach or a Black offensive coordinator. And I think I'm going to point to Cam Newton on that, because that's the way things go, in my opinion, with Black quarterbacks. Let's just run them to the ground. And then when their body starts to react to how we've ran their body to the ground, let's toss them to the side. Meanwhile, Ben Roethlisberger, who has not been good for 3 years, we're going to let him play until he says he doesn't want to play. There is a difference between the NFL mimics our society, right? So there is a difference between the way Black quarterbacks and white quarterbacks are treated, just like there's a difference between how Black people and white people are treated in this country. So it's not up for debate. You could try to debate it if you want, but it's really not up for debate. And I just think that you'd be better served having a head coach that's going to say, hey, these are your skill sets. Let's play to that. Let's also play in a way that keeps you safe. We're not going to run your body to the ground. We're going to keep you make sure you have the longest career possible. On top of that, we're going to cultivate some new talents for you. We're going to write up playing schemes that are specifically for you. I am going to say this, and I understand that this is going to be a sore spot for all of you guys, but know I'm intentional in everything that I say, and I've thought about it. The outliners in that are Patrick Mahomes and Dak Prescott, and that's not to cast them in a negative light, but you can go back and run the tape, y'all. They definitely identify and sit better with their white side than they do with their Black side. Dak Prescott came out and damn near said all lives matter. And Patrick Mahomes did something similar until, of course, their publicist got a hold of them. And then all of a sudden, Patrick Mahomes was like, oh, it's not lost on me that I'm a Black quarterback that's won a Super Bowl. And then Dak was like, oh, I didn't mean all lives matter. I just mean Black Lives Matter too. Like, you know what I mean? So obviously these two are outliners. They kind of fit into that white scheme a little bit better than a lot of these other Black quarterbacks do. And I just think, to be fair, they should get a Black head coach, or like I said, at least a Black offensive coordinator. So I do want to just touch base on a few teams. The Broncos have interviewed a lot of people. They interviewed Patriots linebackers coach, Jared Mayo, and of course they interviewed their Chiefs offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy. I haven't seen him on a lot of lists yet, which is crazy to me because I feel like he's the first person you go to. But let me say this, with all the teams that need a head coach, if Brian Flores and Eric Bieniemy don't have a head coaching job next season, there should be some kind of player boycott league-wide. I know I said that last week, and Chris said I can hang that up because these players are not going to do that. But this is just ridiculous at that point. It's just blatantly obvious that we're still sticking to these racist ideals, and we're not even going to try to get around that for show. That being said, I was born and raised in Denver. So while they did interview Eric, and I do think he would do great there if he was allowed to, that's not a place where he's not going to be expected to come in and succeed immediately, turn that organization around immediately. I think most Black head coaches are going to get that. And again, they're not going to be allowed the time to fail and succeed and maybe even fail again before they find their rhythm like white coaches are. Denver is for sure that organization for me, especially as long as John Elway is affiliated with that franchise. I know he's not the GM anymore, but he is president of football operations. So that makes that organization problematic to me. If Eric goes there, I'm going to cheer for him. I'm going to wish him well, but it does make it problematic to me. I don't want anybody going to Miami. They can kick rocks. I hope that organization fails miserably time and time again. The Raiders are just a problematic organization, so I wouldn't want to doom a black head coach to that organization. And you still cannot convince me that the Houston Texans did not play a part in this Deshaun Watson fiasco, so I don't want a black head coach there either. Now, let's go to the Giants. I do have to shout them out because they have interviewed 4 black candidates for their general manager position. And that's a beautiful thing. That's an executive position that can change things from the ground up. And while I am rooting for everybody black, and I would be perfectly happy if a black head coach ended up in New York, I'm also quite petty. The Dallas Cowboys have not changed their playbook in has to be a better part of a decade. If it was me, I would go get Kellen Moore. And I don't think Kellen Moore is going to be a good head coach at all. I don't think he has it in him. I also didn't think he was going to be a good quarterbacks coach / offensive coordinator, but he's done very well in that position. So I'm not going to count this man out. But what we do know is he knows the Cowboys playbook and they're not changing that. So I would go get him and I would beat the brakes off the Cowboys every time we met up in a division rivalry game. That's what I would do. So again, I'd be perfectly happy if anybody black went to New York. I think it's time for that organization to have a turnaround, although I wish them bad because they let go of Odell Beckham. Odell's here in LA with me now, so I'm going to forgive it. And I just think it's time for New York to get on a better road than what they are. So those are the ones who I'm rooting for. I need you guys to do me a favor. Go to my Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, whatever. Tell me what black coaches you would want to see on what team. Let me know that in all of my comments anywhere. We'll be right back. When we come back, I need you to get comfortable. If you're going through any kind of life tragedy or if you're in this dark place and you sometimes don't think things are going to get better, trust me when I tell you my next guest, which is Jeremy Gumbo Christian, he is going to motivate you. So stay with me. Okay, Jeremy Gumbo Christian, I got you here. Finally.
I'm in here.
Long have I been talking about this? Not that long.
Well, you've been doing this for a long time.
A long time, yeah.
But I've been trying to do something with you for a minute, so.
Yeah, so.
You know what I'm saying?
Welcome.
Doing this thing.
To the hot seat.
The J-Ray TV.
Yep, J-Ray TV.
Yeah, cheers to that one.
All right, so let's start at the beginning. Where are you from?
I'm Louisiana. I'm a Louisiana native.
Mm-hmm. So are you a Louisiana? So who's your football team?
Gotta go, Saints.
Okay, good. You're going to be all right today. When did you know that you wanted to get into entertainment? Did you always know it would be comedy or did you kind of go through music, acting, the same route that most of us go?
Man, like comedy, I didn't know I was doing comedy. I just knew that when I was like 5 years old, that at family reunions, mm-hmm. I was always put on.
Right.
Like, go on, get up there. Go right. Dance. You know what I'm saying? I remember at my aunties and uncles, they would always tell this story that like around Thanksgiving, my uncles, they were always during Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas dinners, they would always have me just get up and just pretty much talk shit.
Oh, okay.
Talking shit. My dad sitting up in the corner like... He wanted to laugh, but he wanted to be dad. He was dad,
yeah,
too,
yeah,
so
yeah.
He wanted to be raising this, this little hoodlum.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always put on, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? I was always put on some type of stage. It's just that I really didn't know that I was going to get into, you know, comedy. First of all, I was in the music industry before mm-hmm. this. I just love music.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to college at Clark Atlanta University, I'm just kind of like, well, I had a little money, so let me go record some stuff. I had homies and stuff that had like little studios in there, like dorm rooms. And,
right.
And I would just record music. And before I know it, like football team and stuff and the basketball team and just people around campus, like, man, this shit hard.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So.
You went to Clark Atlanta?
Yeah, baby.
I'm so jealous.
CAU.
I got accepted to Clark, and Hampton.
Oh, that's a dope school.
And I wanted to go to Hampton so bad. But my dad was not having it. He was not going to let me go because I went to an all-white high school. I mean, I don't want to say all-white, but there was 500 people in my graduate. I am going to say all-white because 500 people in my graduating class, only 10 of us were black.
I'm
from Colorado.
Oh, okay.
The school now is more diverse than it was when I was there. But so I really wanted to go to a historically black college.
Get that experience.
Yeah. And even now I'm like, I'm gonna go to Hampton. I mean, even if I have to do it online and then just can go and visit and stuff like that. But I'm like, I have so much Hampton gear because in my head, I was supposed to go to Hampton.
At HBCUs, they're going to take care of you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. As far as like the networking, you got to do the work.
Right.
It's still like everybody's kind of like, you know, black people, we super talented people. Mm-hmm. So when you got us all put together, you're going to find out who is the keyboardist, who's the saxophonist, who's funny, who can host these events.
Right.
You know, who knows how to edit, you know, whatever it is. So, but you still kind of got to rise, be the cream that rise to the top. Mm-hmm. But I can say like the HBCUs, the alum, they do come back.
So you graduate from Clark? Did you graduate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so and then did you immediately come to LA or did you stay in Atlanta for a while?
I honestly, like I stayed in Atlanta because Atlanta was like the place to be as far as like with entertainment.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And it's even more so now.
Even more so now. And so for me, like I kind of needed to sit in that pocket as far as like, let me keep on building my just on my resume with music. But it ended up being, industry just got a little crazy for me. I always been kind of like, I won't say independent minded, but I've always been true to like the craft.
Right.
And that's with anything. You have your own ideas and stuff. Once you partner up with a corporation, you're going to have to like make some type of settlement. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Or not. You know what I mean? I didn't want to make a settlement. So I ended up getting out of the music industry.
Mm.
And ended up working a little bit in corporate America. Well, I worked freight logistics, transportation, because that's what my dad does.
Oh, okay.
That's what he does. So I kind of worked a couple of like warehouses and then worked in logistics for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I really kind of wanted to do something different. I always felt like, because you raised certain type of way, like I was raised like using my hands.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Just a Southern boy. I was just raised like, I was making money cutting grass at like 9 years old, making money cutting hair at 9, 10 years old, even though I was fucking niggas' heads up.
And they let you do it again?
I still was fucking, they didn't know no better. I was giving niggas the bowl cuts.
Oh,
I was giving the whole bowl cuts.
No, that's not for us.
I ain't know how to fade though. I don't know how to do no fade, but they was happy. They was happy. You gotta think it was like they were like 9 and 10. It was like, Dumbo know how to cut. I was giving niggas the butter knife.
That is fade. So hilarious. I would love to see some of these pictures.
Let me see if I can find some scenes. So. But being a true artist, after a while you always in your head, so I had to kind of make the decision. And I did end up busting a move to LA.
By yourself?
Yep, by myself.
Yeah. Where is the first place you lived in LA?
Westwood.
You off top?
Off top, Westwood.
Get the hell out of here.
Yeah, it was Westwood, Manning Avenue. Shout out to, what's her name? Miss Carol.
First of all, if y'all don't know, going to Westwood off top, that's expensive.
It's a little something.
I went to Gardena.
That's a little ways.
Like right next door to Compton.
Yeah, so I moved to LA and I lived in Westwood.
Ballin'.
I was doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
I was just real big at like, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do. So, and I moved, and I was with my best friend who was my manager at the time. So I wasn't there by myself. I had a roommate. So I wasn't like, I had money saved up and I was in the music industry beforehand and I stunted, you know, but you know, I had the gold grills and had the box Chevys and stuff.
You had gold grills?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
The box Chevys. I did all that shit, but. I just being raised by, you know what I'm saying, a dad who's an entrepreneur, who he himself kind of had his shortcomings with just, I mean, entrepreneurship is hard.
Yeah, it is.
And I think a lot of times when you are, and not to get off track, but I'm going to pivot back to saving money and coming to LA. Mm-hmm. Seeing my dad at times and stuff, seeing the struggle. Mm-hmm. But see, the thing is, like, a lot of times people get, black people, we get like a hard rap when you black and you don't come from a whole bunch of money and you're trying to do the independent thing. You want to be your own.
Right.
And you kind of looked at like, man, you don't need to do, you need to do a 9-to-5.
Right.
You know, that's the best thing.
Right.
When you look at most of, you know what I'm saying, successful people, white people, a lot of their businesses have struggled.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's just that they, you know, I want to say that, you know, that they do have more benefits than we do. That's for
absolutely.
That's for damn sure. Mm-hmm.
More resources.
More resources.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, like, we have to try extra harder.
Mm-hmm.
And I ain't gonna lie, like, you know, I probably may have been, you know, subconsciously a little bit harder on my dad in regards to, like, certain, because there were times that we might have moved different places and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But now, as a grown man and, you know, with my family and having to, you know, make certain entrepreneurship moves at a very young age, at 18, 19 years old, starting my own record label, I made some losses.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I kind of had to smarten up.
Mm-hmm.
And do things differently. Now, yeah, I could have came to LA and me living in Westwood, yeah, it'd be different if I was staying by myself. But I had, you know what I'm saying? I had my best friend who was like my manager in music, mm-hmm. was like, man, let's do this. And this is the best thing financially.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But me, I came here like, man, I'm gonna have to work hard. When I came here, I completely had to put my ego in check. I got a job when I moved here and I was living in Westwood, I got
mm-hmm.
a job working at I did a temp agency.
Mm-hmm.
And I was helped putting up streetlights.
Wow.
Yeah, I was putting streetlights up.
That sounds interesting.
And I was putting streetlights up, the little crossing signs,
yeah.
Santa Monica Boulevard.
Mm-hmm. What temp agency was you with?
I think it's called a Deco.
Okay, I was with Apple One for a long
time.
Yeah,
I know Apple
yeah.
One. That's a real good one.
It's a good administrative.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one for administration.
Yeah.
Look,
mm-hmm.
we talking about temp. If you did temp agencies in LA, you gonna know who these are. As soon as you say
you
Apple
are.
One, I know
mm-hmm.
who the hell that is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not good at no administrative shit.
You're right.
I will fuck all your paperwork up, straight the fuck up. And it's funny because I had to check my ego because when I first got here, I was like, man, I wanted to feel like regular people because you understand I've been in college. And I worked some little college jobs here and there, but I've been working in the music industry pretty much since my sophomore year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I was still kind of toggling back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Whereas like everybody was like, yeah, you gonna make it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying? My peers were my fans, became my fans.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how, you know, the escalation happened real fast for me.
Mm-hmm.
But also growing up where I grew up in, how it was as a kid and working hard and stuff, I kind of miss the just being with folks that were like, you know, moving boxes and shit. Like,
right.
I kind of miss that shit. So for me, putting up street lights was like, I was like happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I was
mm-hmm.
happy. I didn't have to, you know, when you deal with stuff with record labels and shit, like, and you can't be yourself and the creativity and stuff is being compromised, like, you feel some type of way.
Yeah,
and I ain't
absolutely.
Finna sell my soul for nothing.
Absolutely.
For nobody.
Mm-hmm.
You can have all the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I ain't finna do that for nobody. So for me coming here, worked with a Deco and they gave me another job to put up a Hallmark.
Oh, really?
So it was at Westside Pavilion.
Okay, yep.
So I put up a Hallmark on Westside. It's called Amy's Hallmark or something like that. So once I put that up, I always believed in just being like a good worker, just diligent, doing my thing, being myself. But I just wanted to do whatever I felt like it was art, like a craft, like
mm-hmm.
my craft. I wanted to do whatever I needed. I wanted to do it my best. And then from then, like the regional manager saw me. He was like, hey, do you want to apply for a job here? And I thought for a second, I was like, nigga, Hallmark. Nigga, how I go from... going on tour, opening up for niggas like Juvenile and Nelly and shit. And then nigga, now I'm going for, but I had to do a quick check on my ego. And then I was like, it'll be something consistent.
Right.
Because, you know, with temp jobs, they kind of give you something for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up applying for that and I ended up working at Hallmark.
That's hilarious.
I was selling cars at Hallmark.
Oh my goodness.
I was selling Jewish cars.
So how long have you been doing comedy? Like, just, well, let's back up because there's a whole story with that, I know. Because when I met you, you were, what was that place you were doing comedy? I still can't remember. But then it was a theater, and when you walked in, yeah, so the chairs went up like on a slant.
Oh, and this, then, is this where my boy Al Green was at?
Yes.
Was it? Yeah, there was a, it's called Skip Town Playhouse now.
Okay.
My homegirl, Michelle, she owns it now, and two other people, but it was called Moments Playhouse at that time.
That sounds right.
Yeah, yeah. Moments Playhouse. And I forgot some guy who, I think he lives in the Bay Area that produced mm-hmm. that show. Mm-hmm. I cannot remember his name. But him and I think my homie, comedian TC.
Yes.
Yeah, TC was TC. All at that show. Mm-hmm. So that was like my first or second comedy show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was my first second comedy show.
Okay. Yeah, that was my first second comedy show.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a good show.
Yeah, I was trash, but yeah, it was good.
I don't remember.
I did all right. I don't think now what I know what comedy is, stand-up comedy is, I think I was going off my improv background. I was really adamant about just my education.
Okay.
So I was taking like a lot of improv classes. Mm-hmm. I did a little bit of independent acting, like on little small projects and stuff like that, but nothing for real, nothing mm-hmm. big, like more like kind of like short films. But I kind of, through improv, I was kind of blessed in some cool situations. I was able to audition for National Lampoon,
okay.
Lemmings, mm-hmm. and that's, if anybody know, that's like Chevy Chase and Gilda Radner.
Classic.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. classic. So a little history, National Lampoon, before it was known as National Lampoon with Chevy Chase and the Christmas Vacation movies. Mm-hmm. They were like it was called a radio hour. So it was called a National Lampoon radio hour, Lemmings. And this was when, like, I think, don't quote me, but I know Chevy Chase, I believe Gilda Radner, and I think Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Maybe Bill Murray. I think mm-hmm. they all were doing like kind of like sketches, but like for radio.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it was called a National Lampoon Lemmings. They were called a Lemmings. And then that transitioned to everybody who was within the National Lampoon Lemmings. They pretty much all transitioned and went on to SNL. That first season okay. was most of National Lampoon Lemmings.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know it either. And when I auditioned for it, I only had like maybe like one class of like improv.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so natural at improv because that's what niggas do when we back. We don't call it improv, but just shooting the shit. We
right.
sit on the porch and
right.
the barbershop. We just roasting niggas going mm-hmm. back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned how to do that, but within scenes, though.
Gotcha, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I couldn't just come into a scene and be like, Jackie, you woo, 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 woo.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I had to learn how to come into scenes, and that's what they taught me in improv. And from that, I kind of felt like, damn, you know what? I could probably do sitcoms.
Mm-hmm.
So with a person did not know what they wanted to do when they was in this town, that kind of gave me a little bit of push in the direction to
mm-hmm.
go. So 2016 is when I kind of got a part of the National Lampoon Lemmings, and then we did like little tours and stuff, but that kind of died down. And then after that, I started hosting at the Comedy Store.
Okay.
Yeah, I was hosting the Comedy Store.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything about stand-up comedy. This lady named Crazy Cindy, I did like one show up there, and mm-hmm. then my guy Bo Hawkins, he said, "Man, you should let him host." So I started hosting at the Comedy Store, and from
that'd
then,
be fun.
Man, that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun, especially not really having no background doing comedy,
right?
But hosting was fun, and then I think from there, kind of just put me in a situation where I was able to kind of be able to do more comedy and kind of be around it and kind of see where I want to go from there. And I think from there, I was kind of like low-key, like, I want to say like feeling myself.
A little bit, I would too.
Yeah, I was feeling myself. But I was feeling myself because you feel good. Like you
right.
you feel good when you know this is an establishment that you, and I was feeling myself, but I was also ignorant. You know what I'm saying? It's ignorance is bliss.
Oh, gotcha.
The reason why I say I was ignorant is because I wasn't trying to be a comedian.
Oh, okay.
And there was a lot of animosity that kind of came around that.
Like, what you mean?
But well, if you intentionally want to, I put it like this: you host a lot of these different events,
mm-hmm.
These TV shows, or these shows on the internet and whatever. If you have someone who, even though you are intentional about it, mm-hmm. but there are other people who want your spot,
mm-hmm.
right? They're gonna feel some type of way about you.
Oh, gotcha.
They're gonna feel even more so more animosity about you if you just kind of like
half-assed.
I wouldn't even have assed. I was just like happy.
Right.
I was just here. Like, I was just here. And it's a comedy store. So you would see all of Damon Williams, Damon Wayans. Mm-hmm. You would, you know, the Kev Harts. You see all of them come in, and you're in these spaces with them. So can imagine people who've been here for 10 years and they've been trying to do this, and they've been wanting to get on that stage for that amount of time.
Yep.
All I can say is that they're just God, because I came here with no intentions of, I knew what was in my heart. I wanted to get into acting, but I also knew that I was kind of a little bit hard headed when I was doing music. God would try to show me stuff, and I'd be like, nah, my nigga, I'm doing this way.
I'm going to stay here.
I'm going to do what I want to do, God. and he'll make me pay for it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I won't say pay for it, but he'll show me the lessons. I had to learn a lot of lessons. I had to hit my head a couple times. So coming here, I was just like, God, whatever, what you got for me, dog? Mm-hmm. Whatever, if it's Hallmark and I got to move up to the top to be the best at Hallmark, then that's what it is.
Writing cards and stuff.
Whatever. That was an opportunity that was presented to me to write cards for Hallmark.
That's hilarious.
But I think what was happening was that, like, and through the temp service, through Hallmark, Container Store, getting into the comedy store, I think it was just like me trying to be a little bit more obedient to God. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I think because I was feeling myself a little bit too much, I still was like myself. I didn't understand the politics of like the comedy game.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a couple of like altercations that came up. I didn't understand like the politics of it. One in particular, I remember going down to San Diego. I can't remember the club. I think it was American Comedy Co. or something else. Madhouse Comedy, one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, I was supposed to do a certain amount of time,
mm-hmm.
but they ended up cutting my time by the time I got down there.
Mm.
And I went on the
stage. Before you even hit the stage.
I drove them 2.5 hours to get down there. They kept telling me my time was going to get... I'm going to switch you to this part of the show. I said, cool, bet. Okay, all right, and I'm going to take your time down from 15 minutes to 10. All right, bet, it's 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to change you there from you going at the beginning, open up the show up. Cool, still 10 minutes, cool. Now we got to change it to 5 minutes. At this point, when I got down there, I was like.
5 minutes?
I was mad.
Mm-hmm. How many good jokes can you get in 5 minutes?
Right. So I get up there. And I'm just like killing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm killing. And when you're killing like that, you're feeling that wave, like you ain't even thinking about the time.
Right.
You're having a good talk conversation with the artist. And they, look, man, I'm new to this, but I'm getting it from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess I know this now as a producer of comedy shows, but there was somebody was supposed to show me the light.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't see that motherfucker. I wasn't trying to see that motherfucker either.
Right.
Nigga, I drove
focused.
I drove 2.5 hours down here.
For 5 minutes?
And you weren't paying that much?
No, like, nigga, no. I'm going to get in some more jokes.
So I'm killing them. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing just Comic-Con. I got a whole bunch of jokes. Just off rip, just seeing a whole bunch. I'm seeing Black Spider-Man, Black Superman. I'm like, we ain't for the climb no walls. Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
So then I finally get off the stage. And then a comedian.
You did what? 10 minutes?
15.
You did 15? Okay.
Did what? Y'all went over my time about.
Right.
I would have did.
My whole time.
I would have did about. The way I was feeling, I would have did about 30 minutes.
Right.
I get off the stage and I ain't going to say no names. The people who was there, there were some notable names and stuff. And I was cool, excited to see them.
Yeah.
I go backstage, you know what I'm saying? And a couple comedians, they show me love. And this dude comes through the back, us through the back. And I turned around, I was like, oh, shoot. Put my hand out. Kind of look at my hand. He didn't want to shake my hand.
Mm.
Kind of held it down, you know what I'm saying? And he was like, you ran over your time by such and such, such minutes. Dog.
And this is a well-known comedian?
He's known in the sense. I'm cool with him now. He probably don't even remember me at this time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to remember him because, it's, you know, I was new at comedy. This was my early, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he comes and he says all that, and I'm like, dog, like, I said, man, I'll mop you across this floor. I'll beat your motherfucking ass.
Is that what you said off top?
Yeah, because you gotta understand, like, I'm driving 2.5 hours. I don't care what your situation is. I know what my situation was.
Right, right.
Whatever your situation is, you go deal with that. This is what I was supposed to get.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I ain't really getting paid much to do this. I don't know what you're getting paid. That's cool. It might be more so about like you want that stage time or whatever. I want to make my time worthy.
Right.
Because I ain't finna come down here for no 5 minutes.
Right. Yeah, I'd have stayed home for that.
Yeah, I could have stayed home and you know, you niggas could have sent me a tape or something.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was like, man, I'll mop you across this goddamn floor. And he was like, man, you know who I perform with? I do shows with Cat Williams, this, that, and the third. And no disrespect to Cat Williams, but at that time when it was said, I was like, man, I thought he was saying that Cat was here. I thought he was saying that Cat was going to come back, stay. I was like, man, I'll mop you and Cat.
Oh, God.
Because I'm upset.
Mm-hmm.
So you name dropping
mm-hmm.
at that time. And that's just like any situation. If you know, especially back at that time, like, you know, little things a little different. But like if you name dropping as a form of a weapon, that's how I take it.
Yeah.
You're weaponizing your connects.
Yeah.
So at that time, like that's what you want to swing at me. Well, I'm going to swing back at everything you swing at me. That's what I said at the time. So when I said that his eyes got big and he was like, I don't know if this nigga's a comedian. I don't know what's going on. Because I wasn't a comedian.
Right.
I was just a nigga who had an opportunity. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I'm like, I'll go to San Diego. I ain't never been to San Diego before.
Okay.
No, I ain't never been to San Diego. I told my best friend, man, we about to go to San Diego doing comedy.
I think it's disrespectful to have somebody come for 2 hours and you give them 5 minutes. That's
pissed.
Mad disrespectful.
It was.
So I co-sign on your actions.
Appreciate you. I think at that moment, that's what I did. I pivoted in two ways.
Mm-hmm.
One, I was like, man, if I'm going to take this, if these opportunities are coming to me for comedy, I got to start kind of understanding how the business goes with it.
Right.
Because I've had a couple altercations where I had to like really, really physically put my hands on somebody because they were disrespectful.
Mm-hmm.
Like I give you one time, the second time, I ain't finna, you know,
right.
I ain't finna.
Right.
So I think for me, coming from music, when you come from music and you're doing shows and everybody got their clique with them, got their crew with them, you know, some people got something on them.
Mm-hmm.
It was always a sense of respect. I've gone on my stage time plenty of time at a Boosie show.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I never had nobody come and approach me. So, and I know that you could do something. I know that we could do something. So how you think I'm going to take someone who come up there to tell jokes and shit about costumes on the stage? How you think I'm going to respond and you come back? Like, you took more stage time than me. How you think I'm going to respond to that?
Right.
I'm
sure they got their stage time anyway.
They still got their stage time.
Why are we even talking about it?
They still got their stage time. Mm-hmm. And I got love for that comedian.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of that comedian.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But there's a switch. When there's disrespect, there's a switch. Same thing if it was my brother. Same thing if it was my cousins. You know what I'm saying? I'm still going to have love for you. But if you step out of the pocket that I think that you should be respectful in, I'm going to let it be known because you're going to do it again the next time I see you. You know what I'm saying? So, but I had to make a pivot and I took a step back from comedy. I think I did more producing.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I started producing shows, like 2017.
Okay.
I took a step back and I wanted to figure out if I really wanted to be a stand-up comedian or just go directly into like, you know, acting.
Mm-hmm.
So
somewhere in there, you had a health crisis.
That was like,
2019? 2020. So let's fast forward to that. Did you know that you had any health issues at all before that happened?
Mm-mm, I still don't.
You still don't?
Mm-mm. Other than that stroke? Mm-mm.
So where were you when it happened?
I was at my apartment.
Mm-hmm.
I was at my apartment and me and my lady, we came from Eden.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went to go pick my daughter up, and I was going to go to the restroom to wash my hands, and I was feeling like a little hot.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, you know, put water on my face, and then I felt like real dizzy. And I just like, maybe I just got like a headache or migraine or something. But then I fell back to the wall, and I was like, at that moment, you're not thinking like this is what, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get to the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to pretty much just drag myself because my left side was starting to get weak. So I had to kind of drag myself because I fell to the floor and I had to drag myself to the bed. And I didn't really realize something was really wrong until like I tried to get some drinking all the water. feel like the left side of my mouth. So I just like, nigga, I'm about to lay down.
That's what you thought? Just, I'm going to lay down?
I'm going to lay down. Because I ain't never had no stroke before.
Right. So I'm assuming your lady came in and then called 911.
Yeah, because I play so much. I be playing a lot.
Oh, God.
When she came in, and my dogs came in. And she's like, it was like, we home. And I was like, she's like, stop playing. I was like, all right. So this nigga having a stroke.
Oh, God. See, don't play so much.
And she's like, help me. I didn't even say help me. Your brain is not telling you, like, nigga, you having a stroke if you don't know what a stroke is.
Right.
I was just sleeping. I was resting. And when I woke up, it was like, I guess my face was drooped. And I think she thought to like, oh, you know, let me call somebody. Shit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I was out. And then the ambulance came. And, yeah, I was in the hospital for like a week or something like that.
So did the doctors tell you what they think caused it? Nothing like that?
My neurologist said, like, man, like, you, he was like, we can't find anything that caused it. We can just say that you're just super unlucky.
That's a horrible diagnosis.
That's what he said.
Oh, my God.
Dr. Bacador. Shout out to Dr. Bacador.
So how long was your recovery? Was it a full year?
A year. And my recovery is supposed to be, let me tell you how good God is, man. My recovery is supposed to be, I'm only supposed to be at 60% right now.
Oh, are you serious?
I'm supposed to be at 60%. Yeah.
Look at you. Look at God.
Mm-hmm. I was only supposed to be at 60%. He told me, said, looking at your diagnosis and looking at everything, how the stroke was, how bad the stroke was, you're probably only going to be at 60%. I'm like, what does a 60% look like? Probably going to be on a cane for the most of your life.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Most of your life as in transitioning to like a wheelchair.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. To help me walk. To stand up, maybe not. You know,
right.
Maybe to get around the house, but they're looking at my diagnosis, yeah. But it's a lot of work. It was a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say February 24, 2020, up until like July 2021, I was just busting my motherfucking ass. Because I couldn't accept that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I couldn't accept that my life would be different. I couldn't put my daughters up. I couldn't run. I couldn't do the shit that I said I like to do, working at these temp agencies and going back to how I was as a child, like doing manly stuff,
right.
Cutting grass. If I couldn't do that shit, like, I couldn't accept it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I just really just, I did a lot of like therapy, aquatic therapy, and a lot of speech therapy because my speech was slurred. I was stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say this for like anybody who's watching this, like, that changed my life in so many ways. And everything you go through is for a reason.
Right.
I say everything that I've gone through is always for that moment that you are looking at life like, why? Because if you never go through nothing, you're going to give up. For me, like, I was like, nah, I ain't accepting. When I walked out, I told my neurologist, I was like, 60%. I said, what that look like? I said, yeah, cane, wheelchair. I was like, all right, bet. I said, me and God got this from here.
Mm-hmm.
I can't accept that. And I never accepted it.
I love that.
Never accepted it.
I love that.
You know what I'm saying? And that's how powerful the brain is. That's how powerful your spirituality can be, your faith.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do none of that without the work, though.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So when I came to your first show back.
Man, I was so happy to see you. I was like, damn, I ain't seen this. Like, am I seeing a ghost?
Right. I came to your very first show and your first show back.
I was so nervous. I was nervous.
Were you? Yeah, I couldn't tell at all. You killed it too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was nervous.
I couldn't tell.
I told myself, if I get up there and do 1 minute of jokes, if I hit him with the Russell Simmons, thank you, good night.
Right.
Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Right.
If I hit him with that, I would have been cool.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the same place that this the place that I performed it before I had my stroke.
Yeah.
So I think of the emotional ties to that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking like, man, like, shit, is it, you know, like, will I have the same thing happen to me again there?
Mm-hmm.
But man, you go through a lot of, like, I went through a lot of dark times.
Yeah.
A week seems like forever when you can't walk. It seems like forever. When you can't talk to people, you can't even say simple stuff like I love you. Mm-hmm. It can't come out your mouth. You can't pick up your daughters. You can't do none of that. Like, that seems like forever. A walk to the bathroom seems like forever. Mm-hmm. And you know you need help, but when you're used to, when you, you're not used to getting help, you're used to doing, used to being the person that put things on your back. That's the hardest thing. Mm-hmm. That was the hardest part for me, having to like get help.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But all that, I think all that God was like trying to like get my attention, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? And tell me to take a step back, stop working so hard.
Right.
And I was putting a lot of people before me. Mm-hmm. I wasn't putting myself first. Mm-hmm. And I can honestly say, since I did that show, coming back, me putting myself first, I know what that looks like. I can say that from August up until now, I've probably been the most successful in my comedy career, mm-hmm. outside of like, you know, being blessed to work on Wildin' Out and working with Dana Carvey and doing Amazon Prime and stuff like that. Like, I say in this short amount of time, I've learned when to create the boundaries from people, because mm-hmm. it's people that would not pick up the phone and see me and text me to check up on me. But as soon as you back, you know, it's like, hey, bro. Can you do this for me? Woo, 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 woo. Mm-hmm. So I had to learn how to like compartmentalize. You can be a good guy, but you can't be a good guy if you're not being good to yourself.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's been these last couple of months of like being, and I think the difference is that I haven't, other than not putting myself first, I haven't been stressed.
That's good.
I ain't been stressed. Yeah. I ain't been stressed about the industry. I ain't been stressed about what my set gonna be. I mean, I care about my set. I try to be, you know, a little bit intensive about it, but I have not like been like, oh man, such and such gonna be at the show. Kevin Hart gonna be at the show. Mm-hmm. Whoever gonna be at the show. Like, I have not tripped about that. And I think that's part of like the recent success for myself.
Well, cheers to that. Oh, you almost out, but we're going to take that last. Cheers to that. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you, man. I'm just blessed.
I have to give a big shout out to Jeremy for taking time to come by and just sit, talk with me in person, especially during the middle of this pandemic. His story is amazing. And he just made a huge announcement on his Instagram, and I love how he captioned it. He said, this one is for all the little black boys and black girls who keep to fight their dreams alive. And he's excited to announce that he is now a part of the improv. So he's going to further develop his talents as a stand-up comedian and a producer with the improv. So he has his first show at the improv Thursday, February 10th. That is here in Los Angeles. So if you guys need a reason to come to LA in February, there you go. So make sure you follow him on Instagram, which is GumBeezyLove. That's G-U-M-B. E-E-Z-Y-L-O-V-E, and then you can link to all of his other social media from there, and you'll always see his shows that he, because he posts them all the time, and he has a link where you can get tickets even if it's last minute. So make sure you follow him and his story, because I know a lot of great things are going to come for him. I told him he needs to do a documentary. I told him that I would help, so hopefully he does that. But thank you guys so much for listening to today's show. I hope you have some sort of inspiration that no matter what you're going through, you can get through it and you can come out on the other side much better than you were when you started. So that's the lesson for today. Once again, you can follow me on all things social media at Jackie Ray TV. Don't forget to check out Nightcast Media every single week. My podcast, as well as other podcasts and a lot of exclusive articles, are on that website. So make sure you check it out. I will see you guys next week. Be safe.